We are Simone,
Clarissa,
and Lloyd,
and we are reading How to Lie with Statistics by Daryl Huff.
So our quote for today is on page 8, and it says, as Henry G. Felsen, a humorist and no medical authority, pointed out quite a while ago, proper treatment with a cure will cure a cold in 7 days, but left to itself, a cold will hang on for a week.
Now, I feel like this quote is really indicative of what this book represents, right? That's the perfect example of lying with statistics, because obviously you hear something like that, and it's like, a week, so much longer than 7 days, right? It's a joke, clearly, but it represents something.
Yeah, because you'll always have that couple percent of the world that'll be like, oh my god, a week is so much longer than 7 days. When in actuality, a week is 7 days.
Yeah. You guys said what I wanted to say?
No. You start the next one.
Okay. So I wanted to talk about the housing piece of pages, I guess, 0 to 46. Basically, what he was saying was that there are a lot of possibilities to manipulate average, or the meaning of average. He said that he tried to draw people in with saying that if you live in this particular neighborhood, you would make about $30,000 a year. And what he later on said was that this was just the mean, meaning that you add all the numbers and you divide it by how many numbers there are. And this will obviously get you a higher number. As compared to like the mode, which would be a couple thousand, or like the median, which would be a couple thousand. And I thought it was really cool to see, like, I mean, I definitely would have fell for it if you tell me if I live in a certain neighborhood, I would make this amount of money without even realizing like the math behind it.
Right. And that's kind of the point. It's all about how the word average, it seems like such a hard math term. Like, average is this strictly defined thing, but it's really just, it's just a nebulous term. It just means normal. And how do you define normal, really?
Yeah. Yeah. And also made me realize that basically the best way to, I guess the best average would usually be the mode, because it's the most reoccurring number, or like the majority of the people have this amount. And that's better than just saying, you know, what has 50%, or, you know, we're like, add them all up and then divide them.
Right. I find it really interesting that you say that, because a lot of people would say that the median is the best type of average, because it gives you an indication of where most people lie, right? Because I can definitely see situations where the mode is the most useful.
Mm-hmm.
There is a situation about income, average income, that is talked about a bit later in the book. But, the median is often used in as opposed to the mode, because mode, well, okay, let's say we have a group of 10 people, and three of them all make $10 a week, and everyone else makes between $1 and $50 a week, right? So the mode would be $10, but that doesn't really tell you about the other 7 people in the group.
I guess to me, using the mode made the most sense, because it was like you have a higher chance of having this number than compared to the other numbers if you were thinking about getting a job based on how much you would get in the long run.
And just to touch on that, I have a little question about this quote I found. It says, the mode, however, is more revealing. Most common rate of pay in this business is $2,000 a year. As usual, the median tells more about the situation than any other single figure does. Half of the people get more than $3,000 and half get less. That's on page 32. And that's just about the housing thing that I said before. I kind of don't really know what it means. So if you guys could like help me understand a little bit.
Sure. So, what do you mean? There's an illustration that goes along with that particular quote.
Yeah.
And what the illustration shows is it's a graph of how much different people make. And so there's like one person that makes 45,000. I'm doing this from memory, so don't quote me on this. But there's like one person that makes 45,000, one that makes 15,000, two that make 10,000, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's something like 10 that make only 2,000.
Yeah.
And so what it's saying is that if you were to look at the mean, right, it would be somewhere in the middle of 45,000 and 2,000.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be around 5,000, I believe the number was, but that isn't really indicative of what most of the people make, right? Most people make either a lot more or a lot less than that 5,000 number.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at mold, then mold would tell you that the average income is 2,000,
yeah,
right? Because there's 10 people that make 2,000. And that's a little bit better because it tells you how much 10 people make as opposed to not really telling you much of anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't say anything about anyone who doesn't make 2,000. It doesn't tell you if there are people above that, below that, which is why the median is good because it tells you, it gives you 3,000, I believe, is the median for this particular example. And it tells you half of the people make more than 3,000 and half make less than 3,000,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, depending
yeah,
on what you
yeah.
want to do with
yeah.
this information, it might not be more useful. You might want to use the mold, but it just gives you a more general idea of where everyone falls.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
All right. So the next thing we want to talk about is there was another cool example in the book of sample size, and it's illustrated by flipping pennies. So what the author of the book did was he flipped 10 pennies to see what the rate of heads and tails is. And he only did the one test, and his test came out with 8 heads and 2 tails. And so he said there's an 80% chance that if you flip a coin, it'll land on heads. Obviously, that's not actually true, right? And the point he's trying to illustrate there is just that sample size matters a lot. If you only have 10 points in the sample, then it doesn't tell you anything at all. And this is a way that people really often use to try to manipulate statistics.
Just to bounce off of that, I understand what you're saying because we're doing that now, Mr. Miles' class, with I guess sample size when we flip pennies and things like that to see heads and tails. And like how he would ask us, like, how many times would it take for you to flip a coin to really convince you that the coin is fair, to convince you that's an, like enough amount of information that you have. And yeah, I definitely think that this example in the book was not realistic, but it's also really hard to figure out how many times would be realistic enough for you, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, because when I think of fair, I think of 50-50, so most, like, oftentimes, like, the first thing people think of is, like, oh, okay, let's flip it 100 times and see, you know, what the outcome is. But it's really hard finding a realistic sample size, I guess.
Yeah, and it's just really hard to know, like,
yeah.
Is 100 times good?
Yeah.
Is 1,000 times good? And even if you do have an idea of, like, what's the perfect sample size, often advertisers won't even tell you what their sample was.
Yeah, they'll just give you the outcome of it.
Which is why you should really be skeptical when you hear, like, 60% of people do this, because who's that 60% of, right?
Yeah.
And so there's another example of sample size about polio vaccines.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So with the polio incident, people had 450 children get vaccinated, and 680 not get vaccinated. And what they saw was that none of the children actually got sick with polio, but that was due to the fact that in that part of the region and in that community, there was a low number of people who would get polio ever. So it made it kind of useless to try to test it if you already know that not a lot of people are going to get it to begin with. So it was kind of a useless study. They should have did it in a place where it was more common for people to actually get polio. And then also their testing sizes weren't even. It would have been fine if they had 500 kids get vaccinated and 500 not vaccinated. Then they get 450 vaccinated and 680 not vaccinated. So.
Right. And so that's like that's about 1,000 people, which
yeah.
if you're flipping pennies, 1,000 is a good sample, but obviously for vaccinating children, it's not. So I think that's the point that this example is trying to illustrate. Like, sample size, what is a good sample size isn't a static thing. It really depends on what you're sampling.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're going to talk about babies.
Yeah, but we can keep going, it's fine. It'll just be okay. There was a thing called, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, so don't beat me up. Jesus Norm, I don't know what it is. And it was basically saying that your baby should technically know how to sit up straight after it's a couple months old. And it kind of made a lot of parents think that their kids were retarded or that they weren't properly developing because they didn't know how to sit up straight after they were a couple months old.
Right, but obviously if your kids start sitting up a month late, that doesn't mean there's anything wrong with them.
Yeah.
The problem that is in the situation is that they don't tell you that's just an average number.
Yeah.
Right? Because they didn't find that number through median. Or even if they had found that number through median, they don't tell you how far off. They don't tell you the deviation from that number of the average baby. So maybe they found at 12 months your baby should be sitting up, but that came from half of the baby started sitting up at 6 months and the other half at 18 months. So no baby starts sitting up at 12 months.
Yeah. And then he also pointed out that, like, he only made this idea based on observed things, and it was the parents who themselves decided that if their baby didn't do it on time, they were an inferior because they were confusing what was a normal thing for a child to do versus what was a desirable thing for a child to do. Because they desired them to be able to sit up straight after a couple months than it actually being something that's normal and physical for all babies to be able to sit up at that time.
I just think it's like really dangerous how statistics can really like affect a person in their life, because like you have people ready to call their children retarded because they can't sit up at 12 months. You know what I mean? Like it's ridiculous, and it's really interesting to see how statistics is like able to manipulate people. Because I know I probably am manipulated by statistics. Like if someone had told me like 3 out of 4 people, I don't know. Give me an example. 3 out of 4 people,
like 3 out of 4 people get like shingles. Like that makes you like
I'm one of those people. You know what I mean? So I just think it's really cool, and I can't wait to see what else this book has to offer about some dangerous statistics.
Neither can I. And we'll get to see those things on the next episode
of How to Lie with Statistics.
This has been Lloyd Williams,
Clarissa Hudson,
and Simone McCollum.
Signing out.